Versus Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We are here today for public hearings and work sessions on two bills, the first of which is Senate Bill 234. And Senate Bill 234 is relating to the Willamette River Basin, and I will first call on Ken Rocco, our committee staff from the Legislative Fiscal Office, to give an overview of the bill, and then I will call on Senator Yee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 234 is relating to a study of the Willamette River Basin, and I think Senator Yee is here today to propose amendments to the bill. It would basically replace the original contents of the bill. So with that, I'll pass out her. I've already given you copies of the proposed amendments, and I will give you now her testimony, and I think she has some other people here that wish to testify on this bill.
Thanks, Ken.
Done?
Yeah.
I would call forward now Senator Yee. It's a pleasure to have you in the committee this afternoon.
Thank you. Chair Morgan, can I have the two professors from Oregon State University?
Absolutely.
Come up with me. Thank you. Professor Jenkins and Professor Larry
Curtis.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Senator May Yee, representing Senate District 19, consisting of portions of Linn and Benton counties. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify in support of Senate Bill 234. As you may know, I have worked for over a decade as an advocate for the health of the Willamette River. For every session from 1991 through 1997, I was also the sponsor of successful legislative efforts to fund a $400,000 study of the Willamette River, matched by private industry and federal government. The Willamette is not only Oregon's largest river, but also a lifeline that flows by more than 70% of our state's population. I'm here to ask for your support of the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 234, which asks for a narrowing of the provisions of Senate Bill 234 to solely include a study of the causes of deformed fish in the Willamette River. Senate Bill 234 originally included a number of wide-ranging research and study projects related to the physical and biological functioning of the basin. Each of these research studies is a worthwhile project. Each will help put another piece of the puzzle together and ultimately reveal the knowledge we need to restore, maintain, and protect a fully functioning Willamette Basin. Each piece of this puzzle, however, also carries a price tag. The reality of this biennium is that dollar resources are very limited, but the Willamette River is too important an asset and jewel to our state to simply let die. We know we cannot fully fund all of the excellent research projects that have been proposed. In light of that, and after conversations with scientific experts and advocates, I believe that the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 234 should be a priority to be fully funded. This change focuses on a problem that has gone unresolved for nearly half a century. The cause of a deformed fish in portions of the Willamette River. Serious efforts were begun in 1989 to find scientific answers to many questions regarding proper functioning of the basin. Millions of dollars have been spent since then gathering data to assess the current health of river. But today we have not seriously focused on the deformity issue. I believe the time to find answers is now. We must restore health to the Willamette River, and we must enable scientists to discover the best, most effective means to do so. With me today, I have two of the principal researchers for this project from Oregon State University, Dr. Jeff Jenkins and Dr. Larry Curtis. Attached to my testimony is a brief overview of the research we propose to undertake. I will now ask them to explain the details of this important research proposal. Following their testimony, we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you, and I urge the adoption of this important amendment and passage of the amended Senate Bill 234.
Thank you, Senator Yee. We will now just turn the presentation over to Dr. Jenkins and Dr. Curtis to kind of give us the picture of what we're going to undertake here, please.
Thank you.
I have some copies.
My name is Larry Curtis. I'm the head of the Department of Environmental and Molecular Toxicology at Oregon State University. President Risser regrets that he's unable to attend today. A prior commitment precludes him being here. And as you know, Dr. Risser was appointed by the governor to lead the Willamette Restoration Initiative, and he's devoted a great deal of time and effort over the last 3 years to this activity. Recognizing the need to address many challenges facing the Oregon's largest river that lies in its most populated watershed. Oregon State University has a long history of contributing to understanding water quality problems in the Willamette and was deeply involved with studies that began in the 1950s and proceeded through the 60s and 70s that really made a difference in restoring much of the quality in the river. Through involvement of our scientists on teams like the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team and producing the State of the Environment Report, other efforts, OSU is continuing to address problems in the basin, but as you know, many challenges remain. As proposed in amendments, Senate Bill 234 seeks to understand why there is a high incidence of fish deformity in lower sections of the Willamette River. This problem has been observed in Newburgh Pool year after year. In fact, one of my OSU colleagues, Doug Markle, and undergraduate students working with him can show that high incidence of deformities in the river in this section occurred as early as 1951, and we have yet to determine the cause of the problem. OSU would welcome an opportunity to work to identify the cause or causes of high rates of fish deformities in lower sections of the Willamette, including Newburgh Pool, and we share the concerns of Oregonians who live and work along the river, and we would be pleased to address these concerns if the bill is funded. Analysis of likely causes of fish deformities is extremely complex, and we cannot promise quick or easy answers. If funded, our work would involve a team of scientists with complementary experience. Our efforts would involve several things: field work, especially environmental chemistry, to identify candidate environmental stresses that would be likely candidates for causes of the deformities, analysis of various fish and the water and sediments for persistent bioaccumulative organic compounds, metals, and general environmental factors such as water pH. We believe this has to be coupled with controlled laboratory experiments with early life stages of fish to confirm whether candidate agents actually do cause deformities. These would be controlled experiments. Finally, we'd have to link controlled experiments with analyses of actual conditions in the river to see if concentrations of suspect agents occur in ranges consistent with the laboratory results. There has to be a match between what you find a response range in the laboratory and what actually occurs in the environment. As you know, funding these studies was not included in the governor's recommended budget. Our testimony on this bill assumes the funding will be available and supported by the legislative process and the governor. The bill would be part of an overall natural resources research strategy. We support the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board's effort to review the natural resource challenges facing Oregon, and will ensure that our efforts conducted under the bill are consistent with and do not detract from the overall research approach under consideration by OWEB and the state's natural resource agencies. We assure you that OSU will produce a scientific study that will meet with rigorous scientific standards and the multiple expectations of those who live and work in the Willamette Basin. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Jenkins.
I don't know how much I can add to that. This is the official statement from the university, and it pretty much covers the key points that are in the letter that's attached to Senator Yee's testimony on the bill.
So you wish now to take questions from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Krieger.
Chair Morgan, doctors, you had mentioned suspect agents, and obviously we've had fish deformities around the world at different places. What would you suspect the type of things you'd be finding or looking for? Pollutants, chemicals, what in the past has been a history of that type of thing?
I think we would key on three groups of conditions. One would be general water quality disturbances like changes in pH and changes in dissolved oxygen concentration. We know the river changes at the point where these conditions occur. We're downstream from several population centers, and the river slows down at this point and spreads out. There's probably there are conditions that lead to high pH in the river at times, but we don't have detailed documentation of that. Secondly, I think we would have to look closely at compounds that tend to bioaccumulate and might move through the mother to the eggs and be passed along into early life stages in that way. And finally, I think metals and other inorganic compounds, also soluble compounds that may be released as wastewater discharges, pharmaceuticals, hormones that pass through the body, and generally that those groups of compounds, and it would require extensive analytical work to characterize that, and I don't believe those data are available.
Follow-up, Representative?
I had a conversation this morning with the senator because about six, 8 months ago, my dad was 88, and his father, when they immigrated here from Germany, had a sanitation business, known as garbage man at the turn of the century, I guess, in Portland. And he was telling me, just got into talking one evening, they talked and talked about where they dumped all the garbage from 1920 to 1935 to 1940, especially in the early years when they hauled it with horses. They couldn't haul it far. Talking about Giles Lake and all the east side of Portland where they filled in the old rock quaries, Clear, Full, and Captain, parts of the cities on. None of those facilities have liners in them. And they dump compounds and things in there today that would be called hazardous materials. Wouldn't be allowed in even a line dump. They'd be taken somewhere else. Obviously, because some of these are within, 300 or 400 feet of the river, there's a certain amount of material water that's taking that stuff to the river itself. And my question is, are you going to be able to core and pick this stuff up? Or are you going to be picking up in the water as it comes through the ground to the river? And how would you ever go about attacking something that huge on stuff that's been in the ground by the hundreds of tons for 30 and 40 years?
I think the scope of the study that we're talking about today is really to look in the water and perhaps in the sediment. To go out and begin to take samples from soils and old dump sites is beyond the scope of this. But I really think the key issue is what is in the river at concentrations that we can verify would cause a change in a controlled exposure of the type you see in the river. The fact that the history goes back to as early as 51, and these aren't things that were looked at every year. These were samples taken by fisheries biologists that were out there for other reasons, that were archived in the museum, and Dr. Markle went back and looked at. Okay, and there were samples from 1970, there are samples from 51, and then there's, of course, been more recent and much more intensive sampling in recent years. This kind of, this narrows the scope to some extent in that it causes us to be broader than just to look at recent types of agents that we see in the environment. And that's why we have to say, take a broad approach. But once you have identified an agent, you're in a much better position to do source analysis. If you don't know what you're looking for, it's really hard to do source analysis. And finally, the scope of the area is larger than Newburgh Pool. It seems to go all the way to Wheatland Ferry. And it's not a single species of fish. This occurs in almost all species of warm water fish, which reduces the chance that it's a simple genetic problem within one species of fish.
Thank you.
Dr. Curtis, I'm making the assumption that the money is found to fund this. Can you give us the length of time it will take, when you'll be able to get started, when you anticipate being finished, and when we can expect to have some information that results from the investigations?
I would think that we would start as soon as possible, i.e., once we knew this, if whether or not this would be funded. If you decide to fund it, I assume we would be able to start this summer. I think we could have some chemical characterization of the river started right away, and maybe have those kinds of data to be able to provide reports on an annual basis. If we were very just lucky, and the first year or two in doing laboratory studies happened to make a match, we might have something in 2 or 3 years. I think we would be in a much stronger position to be able to cover enough ground to demonstrate some decent progress in a 2 to 4 year time frame.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Nolan? Thank you very much for making your presentation to us. We have a lengthy list of people that have signed up to testify on this measure. And so I would ask people, in the interest of timeliness, because we do have another issue to consider today, to please be as concise as possible in your presentation. And I will first call forward Stephen Anderson. And after Mr. Anderson, I will call forward Jack McIsaac. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen Anderson. I'm president of Anderson Risk Analysis, a local firm, but I have 27 years of experience in the environmental field. And background, just quick background, I served on the original task force that did work back when this was first study, and work and been on several of the advisory boards and technical boards that have overseen a lot of the research that's been done in this area. In fact, a colleague and I used the technique to identify anomalies on a project in the upper river. And when this project came in, we suggested it, and we were kind of interested to see if it would be sensitive enough to pick up. And as you see in time here, it's really nice to see that this has been a good technique to identify potential problems. The real question before us now is why. And I think as you listen to the doctors speak, they've talked about a need and a thought process that they think they can come and get some answers. I think it's important that this study be funded for several reasons. I think that there's a lot of people, when you bring this issue up, I wrote a paper with Dr. David Leland from the Department of Health, when we summarized some of the work that was done on this study and published. And one of the things that we identified was that we've learned a lot, but to not take it the next step and fill in some of the whys would be not be beneficial to the state of Oregon. In addition, I think that this is a good time for this study to come forth, because we have an opportunity, with this being a drought year, be able to have a low flow season and probably a wet flow season in the next subsequent year. Hopefully we'll get water in the next year. But I think the study design would be very advantageous at this time to do the work and have a chance to look at some different kinds of conditions. In addition, I'm working on a couple of projects, some ecological projects in the lower river that affect wildlife and fish and other kinds of issues. And some of the questions that are coming out of that is what happens to juvenile salmon or juvenile fish as they move up and down the river. And since this is an issue of young fish, juvenile fish, I think it has the opportunity to be far-reaching in terms of salmon issues and other kinds of issues as we look at what's happening in the basin. So I would endorse that this study be funded. Some people might say, is it enough money? Maybe, maybe not, but at least it's a step forward. And a lot of times in these kinds of efforts, you need to take that first step. Science is predicated on taking some calculated steps into the darkness and illuminating what we do and do not know. I feel confident. I've worked with Dr. Curtis on other projects. I feel comfortable in the work that's come out of Oregon State. I think we have a good institution, a good set of research people here. The money will be well spent. It will be well used. I think that it is timely now that this committee support that. So I speak in favor of this bill and the amendment as proposed before you, and could answer questions or just let other people testify. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do you, questions of the committee members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll call Jack McIsaac, and after Mr. McIsaac, George Pugh. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jack McIsaac. I represent Pope and Talbot, which has a plant on the river near Halsey. I'm here this afternoon to support Senator Yee's Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 234, which will provide for studies relating to the extent and the probable cause of fish deformities. For the past several legislative sessions, Pope and Talbot has joined with Senator Yee and others to involve itself in the Willamette River study, which she mentioned in her testimony. This is probably could be described as another step in that direction. We hope that the legislature will provide the funds. Senator Yee has come up with the Oregon State University Department of Toxicology, which is very highly thought of. Those of us who live and work along the river feel it's incumbent on all of us to do our very best to keep the river as clean as possible. Our company is presently working through the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, who also will testify here today, to fund studies that are intended to improve temperatures in the river. That's not part of this study. And as part of the effort to plan to contribute funds to the DEQ that will supplement its budget in that area. An effort such as the one proposed by Senate Bill 234 will go a long way to help clean up the Willamette, and its results will also serve as a tribute to Senator Yee's long devotion to the river and to Linn County. This is really more of a Me Too testimony to Terry Witz, which is going to come later, I'm afraid.
Thank you very much. Call forward George Pugh, and after Mr. Pugh, Terry Witt.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Board members. My name is George Pugh. I'm a grass seed farmer from Shedd, Oregon, which is just above high tide on the middle section of the Willamette. I come, while I've been privileged to represent various farm groups throughout my life, I'm here as an individual, but I think my situation is quite similar to other farmers in that we in the Willamette Valley, who are producers of agricultural crops, value the Willamette River as a quality source of water and is a very important adjunct to our farming activities. Since we first heard about the skeletal deformities of the fish, there's always been a question as to what caused them. Certain groups have suggested that perhaps some of agriculture's practices and or materials have been at the cause of this. It's time to find out what are the causes so we can either correct our agricultural practices or put the rest to rest a rumor that we might be the cause. I have to admit, when I first heard about the deformities in chubs, I, having grown up along the river, we didn't have whole chubs in a very high regard, and I assumed that maybe it was just a shallow gene pool was the whole reason, but I heard that theory dispelled. But I do appreciate Senator Yee's bringing this matter to head. I think it's important for agriculture in the valley to find out what the cause is, and I would urge your support of this initiative to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Terry Witt, and after Terry, Pete Test.
That's true. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'll try to be brief and paraphrase my comments. I think it is important, however, to note that while Oregonians for Food and Shelter is basically an agricultural chemical coalition, we strongly support and work towards responsible use of these materials, both from a safety and a lawful perspective. And the importance of that is that the law that governs the use of pesticides is a federal law which says that they must be able to be used without unreasonable adverse impact on man or the environment. And obviously that includes fish. OFS has been a champion of water quality for a long time, starting back after I've been associated with OFS. We started in 1989 with the Groundwater Protection Act, in 1991 with Senate Bill 1010. We helped produce the Wellhead Protection Program the state implemented. Over the past decade, there have been millions and millions of dollars spent on the Willamette River, as has been already testified. And there's been much data collected and many reports written, but unfortunately, to the disappointment of many of us, one of the major unresolved issues since the 1950s has been the issue of deformed fish. And I think this has created a very, I guess I would say, unfortunate situation, because some have taken the opportunity to use this unknown to point fingers at a lot of individuals as, quote, the likely culprits. And I think if you go back through history, you'll see that that's been everything from fertilizers to pesticides to farmers to foresters to urban water treatment plants to pulp and paper. I think just about every entity has at one time or another been pointed a finger at as the likely culprit. Fish deformities are very scary to the public. It's something obviously that no one wants. And I think now is the time that we find some definitive answers, some answers based in science as to what is causing these problems. While we remain fairly confident that agricultural chemicals are not the source, we want to know, like all the other industry segments want to know, if it indeed could be linked to any of our activities. We need to know that so that we can take the appropriate steps to modify activities or the materials we use to correct the problem. And with that, I would just wholeheartedly support the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 234 and urge your support as well. Be glad to answer any questions.
Sure, Morgan.
Representative Krieger.
I don't think, Terry, we need to be convinced that there's a need, but maybe Senator Fraley could help, and maybe you could help. It says that the Oregon Water Enhancement Board shall allocate monies for. Is there a way they can do that without going through their grant process? Because I don't know any other way that we were able to move monies from point A to point B except through the grant process. And that can be fairly long and cumbersome time-wise. You have to make your grant, and it has to get in line with the next cycle, whenever that is. You could be 6 months to 9 months to getting money from that source, unless there's a new funding mechanism I'm not aware of.
Representative Krieger, when we get into work session, our staff has prepared a report for us to talk to us about the ways that the money can be used in that fund.
All right, thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Witt? Thank you very much. I'll call Pete Test from the Oregon Farm Bureau, and after Mr. Test, Catherine Bennett.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. And I know you're in a hurry, and I'm really tempted to just say ditto and all of the above, but I will have a few seconds to indicate that Farm Bureau has been heavily involved in all problem-solving efforts as relates to water quality. It's necessary for all life to have good, clean water, and when you have a river as big as the Willamette that has fish deformity problems that are something that are emotionally troubling at best, and at worst a disaster, an effort to try and find out the causes and hopefully help towards a solution is absolute. We've been involved in watching all of the research since 50s and earlier, as I can tell from my predecessors. I've been involved in trying to get it done, but we have been, again, like Terry said, a little discouraged that we've identified a lot of problems, but we've never really taken and made the effort to delve into those problems and trying to find some solutions. I think this is an opportune time to do something that really has to be done. We fully support a real direct effort to try and really get on top of one real major wrenching problem in the basin, and hopes that'll push us towards taking care of some of the further ones that we have identified down the road. And with that, I would like to say again, I support the amendments to Senate Bill on 234 and hope that you would find it in the budget to see that it was supported one way or another. This research is absolutely necessary for not only the local Willamette Valley, but what we'll find here, I think, will help us find solutions to problems that may be elsewhere. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on the bill, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Questions or comments for Mr. Tess? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I call Catherine Van Natta and Jeff Huntington will be next.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. I'm Catherine Van Natta, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. We'd like to join our colleagues today in supporting the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 234. The Northwest Pulp and Paper Association was originally formed back in the 40s to help the mills clean up the Willamette River, back when we didn't have a lot of control technology on our mill processes. We still have members that operate on the Willamette River, and we're here today to urge your passage of Senate Bill 234. We have supported and contributed money and resources to the prior phases of the Willamette River studies under the leadership of Senator Yee, and we want to continue under the Senator's guidance to work on the skeletal deformity issue. So we would urge your passage of the Dash 4 amendments and funding for the bill. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Call Jeff Huntington, and next is Jeff Jenkins.
Oh, that's me.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. I'm Jeff Huntington, the Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. I'm offering testimony today because OWEB is the agency that's designated to administer the Lottery Fund Research Account, which is identified as the source of funding for the research proposed by Senate Bill 234 as amended. I want to first really thank Senator Yee for graciously including OWEB, as she worked really hard with a whole lot of interests to pull them together to focus on what is a very real problem in the Willamette River. I'm going to defer to OSU and Senator Yee and others that she is working with who know a lot more about how to frame specific research proposals than I do. I can't offer an opinion as to the scope of the research itself, and instead what I want to do is just spend 1 minute giving you a sense of OWEB's plan for investing in research and to express a concern that OWEB has about the earmarking of half of this funding source for research investments for a particular project, and how that may affect the board's efforts to develop a comprehensive approach for prioritizing investments in research needs. When the third account was established, there were three accounts that were established as the principal source of funds for distributing Measure 66 dollars, and the third account was established as a principal source of funds available to support research that's needed as part of implementing the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and meeting other research needs. When that happened, OWEB agreed to defer all of expenditures from that account until a strategic plan was developed for investing the funds from that third account in areas of highest priority to implementing the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. Throughout the fall, a subcommittee of the OWEB board worked with the chair of the Oregon Plan Science Team, the IMST, and the head of the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team to develop an approach to investing dollars in research projects in order to leverage the state's dollars and apply them to priority issues that a variety of constituencies see across the state as needed to help bolster the implementation of the Oregon Plan. Attached to my written testimony is a brief summary of the approach that was adopted by my board in January. And it all begins with the Oregon Plan IMST, the science team, and will involve quite a process for arriving at a coordinated and integrated list of priority research projects that a range of constituencies we hope will agree that should be invested in order to have an effective implementation of the Oregon Plan and bolster that. I'll skip the details of that process. You can look over just the review that I've attached to my testimony, and if you have questions, that's great. I'll be happy to answer them. But the essence of my testimony today is that by specifically earmarking about $500,000 from that account, whether to this project or any other particular project, even if they address a very real issue that is of great importance to the watershed, it may impact OWEB's ability to really effectively administer the remaining funds in the account and to reduce our ability to leverage those funds with other fund sources and that we might gain from a substantial pool of dollars, and to invest that research account in a prioritized way based on the process that the board has been anticipating. And that's the essence of what I have to offer to the committee today.
What I should do here is just interject a comment that Mr. Rocco has prepared a financial graphing of the fund so that we can see over time how much money will be in it. We'll look at that when we get into the work session. Are there any further comments or questions for Mr. Huntington? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
I will call Jeff Jenkins, and after Mr. Jenkins, I will call Larry Curtis.
Apologize.
Oh, they've already been. And Steve Greenwood from the DEQ is the last person. Thank you for coming today, Steve.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Steve Greenwood from DEQ. I guess I'll be brief. I would echo the appreciation that has already been expressed to Senator Yee for her leadership on this issue, both this bill and previous ones. A lot of the technical information has already been talked about. I think I would only emphasize one thing that I haven't heard today, which is not only has the previous work identified skeletal deformities, but also increased cancer and health risks to those who eat fish from the Willamette. This is, we think, a serious and an important issue, and the solutions need to be based on good science. And this bill is certainly pushing us, I think, in that direction. I would echo the comments of Jeff Huntington. The funding earmarked in the bill is not part of the governor's budget, and OWEB is set up to do that. Having said that, I also, I guess, would emphasize the DEQ is not directly affected by the bill. We're not funded by it or directly participating, but the activities in the bill are certainly complementary to a number of activities that we are undertaking.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Is there anyone out in the audience that would like to testify but hasn't been called forward yet? If there is, please come forward now. Okay. You will also note that you have gotten committee members' letters from Rick Bastach of the Willamette Restoration Initiative and John Ledger of Associated Oregon Industries in support of this proposal. And with that, I will close the public hearing portion and enter a work session on this bill. And at this point, we will ask for our committee staff to give us a report on what you found out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Dash 4 amendments that you have before you basically replace the original content of Senate Bill 234. Section 1 describes a study that is to be done using the services of Oregon State University's Department of Environmental and Molecular Toxicology. Section 2 describes the an allocation of money from the Restoration and Protection Research Fund to the Department of Higher Education to conduct this study under the management of that department. And then Section 3 provides a lottery funds expenditure limitation to the Department of Higher Education in order to conduct this. I have a handout that just describes the Restoration and Protection Research Fund for you and some background on its creation. This fund was established in the last legislative session as part of the implementing legislation for ballot measure 66. During deliberations on the establishment of the mechanism to implement measure 66, the legislature had expressed some interest in setting aside money for research activities. So this fund was established for that purpose. Basically, its purpose reflected in ORS 541378 is funding research and other activities related to the restoration and protection of native salmonid populations, watersheds, fish and wildlife habitats, and water quality, including but not limited to research, monitoring, evaluation, and assessment related to the Oregon Plan. The source of funding for this fund are basically our interest earnings from lottery revenues deposited into the OWEB accounts, and these were set up with two accounts. One is for operating expenses. One is for 35% of the Measure 66 dollars, which are eligible to use for operational expenses. And then the other account is the Watershed Improvement Grant Fund, which 65% of Measure 66 revenues are put into that account. So because lottery interest earnings are required to be deposited back into the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund unless otherwise noted in statute, this research fund was established to take those interest earnings and put them in the separate account to fund research projects. The fund was used by the 70th Legislative Assembly, only authorized the expenditure of $1 from the fund in the 1999-01 biennium. And the intention of that was to allow the fund to accrue revenues so that the legislature could allocate those funds beginning this next biennium. As of the end of February, this fund balance was $1,056,143. Based on the growth that's occurred in that fund over time, we anticipate the balance to be between $1.4 and $1.5 million by the end of the biennium.
Thank you. Any questions on Mr. Rocco's assessment of the financial situation? The Representative Krieger raised a question in the presentations that related to the legislature's ability to appropriate money out of this fund. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, Madam Chair. During last session, the legislature made direct allocations of funds to various entities, including the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Forestry. And these were direct allocations that the legislature directed the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to make. They did not have to go through a grant process. The legislature has the authority to direct allocations of these resources. And that would be the same mechanism that would be used in this case, where the legislature is directing the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to allocate $500,000 to the Department of Higher Ed for these functions as described in the Dash 4 amendments.
Further questions for Mr. Rocco on this proposal? Hearing none, have you gotten to the end of all your pile of paper?
I believe so, Madam Chair.
The Chair would be very glad to accept a motion on this. Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, I would move that the subcommittee adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 234.
There's been a motion made to move the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 234. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there anyone that disagrees with the motion? The motion is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nolan.
I would move that the subcommittee approve Senate Bill 234 as amended and send it to the full committee with a Ducasse recommendation.
Representative Nolan has made the motion that we move the amended version of Senate Bill 234 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a Ducasse recommendation. Is there any discussion of the motion? Senator Dukes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was tied up testifying in another committee, so I missed a lot of this, although Senator Yee and I have discussed this a number of times. And I just wanted to recognize Senator Yee's dogged continuation on the Willamette River. And I think without her, we wouldn't get as far as we've gotten at this point, but with her, we're going to get a long way. And we're going to have another talk, Senator, because I've never seen so many letters of support for a natural resource issue in my life. But I think it's great. Without this basic information, we're not going to make any progress out there. We've got to know what's going on and why we have deformed fish and to what extent we have deformed fish, whether it's just an anomaly or whether there's something much deeper going on. So, good bill.
I would very much agree with Senator Duke's comments. I think that because this is a river that flows through the most highly populated part of the state, and it's a river that is used and held in people's hearts in the Willamette Valley, that it's critical for us to give people the confidence that when they swim in the river or when they drink the water from the river or eat the fish from the river, that they aren't going to be suffering health consequences from doing that. And I think that the basic research that this is a continuing part of is so critical for us to get our arms around what the real problem is here. And we aren't going to be able to figure out a solution to this until we have assessed what's causing the problem. And I think that it is very gratifying to see everyone line up in support of this project that is such a worthwhile project. And I would very much urge the members of the committee to vote in favor of this motion. Anyone else like to take a few moments here? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Hanson? Aye.
Representative
Hayden?
Aye.
Representative
Dolan? Aye. Senate Bill 234 is moved to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a Ducasse recommendation. We have to do carriers. On the House side, Representative Nolan, would you do the honors?
I'd be delighted to.
And on the Senate side, Senator Yee, of course. Very excellent. Thank you very much. And for Full Ways and Means, Senator Yee, would you also do the presentation there? Thank you very much for coming before us today. The next issue that we have on our agenda is a grant application request from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And the first thing we'll do is hand out all the paperwork.
Thanks. I've already got that, don't I?
Yeah. And Mr. Rocco, could you give us the LFO explanation of what we're doing here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under state law, which is ORS 291375, agencies need to request from the legislature permission to apply for new federal grants. And this has to be done to the Joint Ways and Means Committee during session and to the Emergency Board during the interim. The request you have before you is from the Department of Fish and Wildlife for a federal grant in the amount of $300,000 for an education outreach program. I've provided you with the agency's request letter, the LFO recommendation on this matter, and the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division recommendation. And I believe the agency's here to give you any other further information on this that you'd like.
Mr. Rocco, as a matter of procedural information for the committee, we are at this point determining whether or not to give the agency permission to apply for the grant. If they receive the grant in the future, will they be coming back to us for permission for a limitation raise so they can spend it?
Madam Chair, that is correct. The discussion of this proposal, the LFO recommendation would be that they do that, and I believe Budget and Management's recommendation also is that they would come back for a limitation when the grant's awarded. And we're further recommending that that future grants from this, it's a 5-year grant proposal, but future requests for money from the federal government also be brought back to the legislature for approval.
Thank you very much. We call forward right now the ODF&W, and I assume that it's Director Lindsay Ball. And if you would like to have your any staff people with you, they're very welcome. Good afternoon.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We've come to before you today seeking authorization to submit an outreach grant to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for $300,000 in the next biennium to pay for the cost of the Oregon Wildlife Magazine and produce a natural resource video and 10 hatchery and wildlife area brochures. To inform our public on what the Department of Fish and Wildlife does with fish and wildlife resources. We began producing a bi-monthly full-color magazine called Oregon Wildlife in March-April of 1999. The purpose of the magazine is to increase public awareness, which ultimately leads to appreciation, understanding, and support of our fish and wildlife resources. The magazine routinely contains information on hunting, fishing, wildlife habitat management issues, wildlife viewing, how-tos, species spotlights, critters and kids, a column dedicated to Oregon's youth. The cost to subscribe to the magazine is $12.95 per year for 6 issues. ODFW currently has about 4,000 subscribers in the state. We predict it will take 3 to 5 years for the magazine to attain a number of subscribers and pay for itself. Presently, the money that is used to produce or publish the magazine are hunter and angler dollars. The grant would allow us the opportunity to use those hunter and angler dollars for other issues in the state of Oregon. It currently costs $300,000 to produce the Oregon Wildlife. In its first biennium, we are projecting that that will drop to $200,000 in the upcoming biennium. ODFW already has the match money from the magazine subscriptions. This is counted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as a program income. An example is that if we have $50,000 in program income from magazine subscriptions in the next biennium, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will reduce the size of the grant for the magazine by that amount. So in other words, as subscriptions and income arises, the amount of grant money provided to the state will decrease, but it'd be a self-sustaining paying for the program in and of itself. That concludes my testimony. If there are any questions that I may answer.
Representative Krieger.
Chair Morgan. Mr. Ball, I get to call you Lindsay, can I?
Sure.
As long as yes, Representative.
As long as I have no one here. I like what this does. I have one concern. I think you can probably guess where I'm going. A video on the life of a wild salmon, a hatchery salmon, and the role that each hatchery plays or hatchery fish play. You're developing a wild fish policy, and I would want to be very careful about the content of that and what that portrays to the people that see the video, that it doesn't revert back to the 1992 wild fish policy or wherever we did that one that really did never get implemented. To address how you're going to portray a hatchery fish and their ability to coexist with wild fish and not dilute the gene pool and have behavioral habits the same, and all the things we're talking about in your conservation hatchery program, it's all part of one thing. But I think it's important that what's put out there to the public is going to mesh with these new policies that are being developed.
Chair Morgan, Representative Krieger, you're exactly right. If we produce a document such as a video, it has to fit within our department policy, the natural fish conservation policy, and also the upcoming hatchery production policy that we're starting to put together. Those policies should be in place by the time that the grant is awarded. Anyway, that is my goal at this time. And then the video will be second underneath that policy so it fits. I'm sure you will find that there will be some science talking about and addressing genetic specificity in different watersheds of the fish. And as you know, we are working towards matching that hatchery component to almost be a mirror image of the wild component from our point of view. Won't be exact. But as the scientists say, we can never make it quite exact, but we can certainly get it close enough to where we are not destroying the genetics of the wild run with the fish that we are stocking in our streams.
Well, we might get lucky and develop a superior fish.
Chair Morgan, Representative Krieger, I'm not going to speculate.
We've done it with everything else, you know, genetically, and I think we can do a lot, though, to emulate wild fish that the interbreeding, on, you know, spawning on the spawning grounds isn't going to dilute wild fish population anyway. I think that's going to be the key.
Representative Hayden.
Pretty much the same thing, but with just a different emphasis. A brochure on watershed networks, brochures on wildlife areas, protection and management of natural resources, so on. With this, and it's to be, it is to be education and outreach. Education, I understand. Outreach, I'm not so sure what that is. But my question is, there's nothing in here about the wise use of forest fiber, which are an important part of watersheds and wildlife. Would this literature have an advocacy position on the use of fiber?
Chair Morgan, Representative Hayden, not that I'm aware of at this time, but that is something that could certainly be, put into a watershed brochure.
Well, Madam Chairman, I wouldn't expect it would be the mission of your agency to promote wise use of timber, but I would hope that it would not be, that this $300,000 would not be used to stifle the use of our timber resources in watershed and wildlife areas.
Chair Morgan, Representative Hayden, I wouldn't want to see that stifled either. That's an industry that's very important to Oregon, and it's not going to go away. I mean, let's be honest about that. So we are going to have to ensure that both fishery management and timber management are compatible. That one doesn't destroy the other and vice versa.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to take off a little bit from where Representative Krieger was. And I just sort of highlighted what I considered the salient points here where we have, and I guess I'm not, this isn't yours, but where we have the bullets. It's $200,000 for a magazine. that would be a magazine that today doesn't pay for itself. It's $20,000 for a salmon video. We actually have a salmon video, although the outcome probably isn't what you wanted. So maybe this is the response to that one. $30,000 for a brochure, $36,000 for another brochure, and $14,000 for a final brochure. I like educational pieces, but I think getting out with the public does a whole lot more than, I don't know who's going to see the salmon video, hopefully all the folks who saw the last one, and the brochures, although I'll admit, when I was at one of your hatcheries that I'd never been to before, I would have appreciated a brochure. Now, how many of us pull off the highway to go through those and figure out what kind of fish they have, I don't know, but... this one is just a tougher sell for me at home, and I'd be okay if you didn't want $50,000 of general fund money. When I know what all is wrong and going on with our natural resources issues today, I don't think a magazine, three brochures, and a salmon video are going to do it, and I'm not sure how much they're going to do to enhance it. And like Representative Krieger, I have a concern as to exactly how the hatcheries are going to get portrayed, because before you were in this part of the agency, we've had a variety of explanations for hatcheries over the last, say 3 years. Everything from the fish are biologically inferior to they're okay, and they seem to be doing well right now, but I have no idea exactly how they're going to come out in some of these things, and I have to say that makes me nervous. So you can respond if you want, but that's my read of this thing, is there's federal money and it's out there available and we ought to apply for some.
Director Ball, could you address the point that the senator raised about the $50,000 general fund? My understanding is that there is no general fund involved in this.
Chair Morgan, that is correct. This
program I like.
This should be, and our anticipation is, this will be a self-sustaining program. And the $50,000, I think, is being referenced, comes from the sale of the magazine today under subscription. That's what people are paying now for the magazine. And that money is the state's match for the grant. And therefore, with the grant money is really where we are putting license and tag dollars in place of today. The grant money will release those license and tag dollars so we can use them in other areas in the state. So it should be self-sustaining. That's the long-range goal. If it's not, I think you will see this program evaporate.
Senator Dukes, you had a follow-up.
Well, yeah. If the magazine doesn't pay for itself today, I'm not sure how you're going to make $100,000 a biennium off of it, unless that $200,000 federal money that's going in up on top for the magazine is going to sort of get recycled and come back looking like our part of the grant. But how do you get to take a magazine that isn't paying for itself today, bring in some federal money to boost it, and then make $100,000 of biennium profit off of it?
Chair Morgan, Senator Dukes, I've had the same questions. I have the same caution about this.
Did you get them answered before you got here?
No.
Okay.
and my question that I asked my staff was that the magazine has not been marketed as they had hoped it would from day one. There was never any money put forth to market that. It was just simply circulated among fish and wildlife license holders initially. There are plans to get that marketed to the grocery store magazine racks, the bookstores, etc. With a little bit of work that has been so far with that, we have seen an increase in subscriptions. And so in time, it has increased from the number of copies that have been circulated. It is hoped that this will continue to increase with the grant.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lindsay, could you expand upon, Captain Ball. I will always know you as Captain Ball. Would you expand upon how help me understand again how the grant money helps you put other tag and license money to work in other areas and how that benefits us overall.
Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, currently the magazine is being funded with other funds, funds that are generated from licenses and tags that are sold by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. This biennium, that amounts to about $300,000. If we attain the grant money and are successful in our application, then those dollars from the grant will supplant the other fund dollars that we're currently getting, or that we're currently using to pay for the magazine. Since those are other fund dollars paid for by license and tag holders, then we can put those monies into other program areas in the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay.
Captain Ball, do you know about how much license and tag revenue will be freed up if this is successful?
Chair Morgan, current estimate for this biennium is $300,000. For next biennium is $200,000.
Thank you. Representative Nolan had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the magazine appropriate to a high school or even middle school audience, or is it geared exclusively at an adult population?
Chair Morgan, Representative Nolan, I think you will find that that magazine, and Lisa Deborah Kerr, the program manager, can correct me. I think it's written at sixth grade level and higher. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then, Madam Chair, if I might.
Yes.
How much distribution do you have to schools or school age organizations? And where I'm leading is, can this be useful to supplement educational programs, and could part of your marketing be to find sponsors to purchase subscriptions for schools or for 4-H groups or for scout groups or that kind of thing? Or do you already do that?
Chair Morgan, Representative Nolan, currently there are very few complimentary copies of the magazine sent out. Everything that is, for the most part, everything that is subscribed to is money that comes into the program. So we have not been free with distributing complimentary copies out to, like, libraries, schools, etc. That is part of the long-range forecast.
Great.
We all get them.
We what?
We all get them?
We get them.
Yeah. Of course, we do.
Well, especially if you sit on this committee, Senator.
Haven't you seen yours, Representative Nolan, with the big elk on the front?
Well, no, actually, Madam Chair, I thought that that's exactly what Representative Nolan was referring to, that they're written on the sixth grade level for us.
I was going to say
Madam
that.
Chair, let the record state that that remark comes from Representative Krupp and not from me.
Captain Ball, I have a couple of questions. I know that your agency is very sensitive right now to the lack of trust between the legislative body and the agency, and that you're doing a lot to try to address that. And I'm wondering if there exists at this point any prototypes or plans for what these, like what the video is actually going to look like and what the brochures are going to look like. And if it's possible, as a condition, if you actually are successful in getting this grant and you come before either the legislative process or the e-board, if at that time it would be possible to introduce in actually what you're planning to publish and print with this money, so that we can sign off on the concepts.
Chair Morgan, we can accomplish that. That'd be easily done when we come back to e-board without any problem whatsoever. We can give you a very specific outline as to what would be included in the video, and probably give you a prototype of what a brochure would look like.
What I would request then, and I'm not really sure if we can write a note onto this, is that at the time that the agency comes forward to request the increase in their limitation, that they bring prototypes and models for these publications to the policy committee, which I don't know if we'll be having a salmon committee in the interim, but whichever of the policy committees would have jurisdiction over the agency so that they can be okayed and a recommendation on them made to the e-board.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to expand on that even and say that I have some difficulty with this entire concept. I'll be reluctant, yes, under a certain circumstance, and I'll tell you why. Because I think we have greater needs at ODF&W, frankly, in terms of, I mean, you've got a bunch of law enforcement positions that have gone away. We've got poaching problems. I'm very concerned about some of those issues, especially in light of possibilities of disease issues that we may have to be dealing with, and that ODF&W may not have the field staff to do what they need to do. And if I'm going to put $300,000 out there, I'd rather put it in people out in the field, from my viewpoint. However, if this frees up $300,000 for other purposes, okay, I can go along with that. However, I'd like to have a budget note that says if you don't get your $300,000 in federal money, you don't get $300,000 or other funds. All this stuff goes away, period. And use that $300,000 of other funds for something else I think is more important. That's my view, Madam Chair. If they get it, fine. If they don't, they don't spend it on this at all, period. They put that money to use somewhere else in the agency.
Representative Hayden.
Well, Madam Chair, are we in work session?
Yeah. Or are we?
Not yet.
We should be in public hearing.
Go ahead. Well.
We are now.
Well, Madam Chair, if there's to be no advocacy position competing with other agencies, such as forestry or ag, and if it is to have some legislative review, then I rather favor leveraging some of our dollars to capture some federal dollars, which hopefully will be spent in the state of Oregon by Oregon printers and Oregon distributors, and it will be at microeconomic development, I would think. So I think this is a good thing.
Senator Dukes.
Well, I'll go along with it, but it occurs to me that if we just got rid of the magazine, we could save a fish and game officer. That's $150,000 a year. And sort of as my own little personal scale, it wasn't hard for me to get the... It's a good production. Don't get me wrong. It's a great magazine. But just my own sense of priorities can be somewhere different. But in going through this little thing, we can end up freeing up some money. Maybe not all of it, but some of it that may help us get there.
Mr. Rocco has some pearls of wisdom for us.
I don't know if they're pearls, Madam Chair, but I don't know what they are. But I think the committee needs to remember that this is just approval for the department to apply for a grant. And there will be several opportunities after this to discuss how they're going to use the money, whether or not they can even use the money, because if you direct them to come back for limitation, they have to do that. With respect to Representative Krupp's issue, that's something that the budget note you're talking about could be put into the agency's budget itself, basically, and say that this magazine, if this federal money is not available, this magazine will not be produced. And you could take care of it that way. And then whether the federal dollars come forward or not, then that could be dealt with at that time.
Mr. Rocco, how could it be dealt with to request that the materials be presented for censoring or whatever you want to call it?
Madam Chair, I think for enlightening the legislature, that you could put in a direction that when the committee, when the agency comes back with the report on whether they got the grant or not, and they're asking for limitation, you could direct them basically to go to a whatever appropriate oversight committee exists before they approach the e-board. That's something that the emergency board does on a regular basis, so you could put that direction to the department, and I'm sure they would comply with that.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
Chair Morgan, I think the discussion we're having shows that the Department of Fish and Wildlife in the past has had a credibility problem, not only with the legislature, but almost every user group, from the commercial fishermen, the fly only, the elk, you name it. Mr. Ball has taken on a monumental task, and I think we need to give him every tool that he has to restore the credibility of the agency, and I think this might be a way of doing that, a start. And if we had the confidence, the commission did, the governor did, whoever who did, to put him in the position that he is, I think he needs to be given that opportunity.
To cover. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Although I understand the value and the procedure for basically two steps of the approval process, first approval to apply, and then if granted, approval to actually expend to accept the federal grant and pursue the activities that it is intended to fund, I would hope that we would not send the department on a wild goose chase, and that if we have no intention of approving their implementing the grant, we should tell them not to apply for it, rather than have them spin their wheels and the federal agency spin its wheels for something we don't intend to actually approve when it comes back.
Good point.
I'm not advocating that position, but if that's where we're going, let's say so now, rather than expend resources, human and otherwise.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look at this as an excellent opportunity to help get the federal government to pick up part of our education program. And there may be questions in terms of how valuable that education program is, how valuable the magazine, whatever. And they can always be improved, and we can, at another time, it might be wise to focus on how good of a job we're doing in terms of the educational opportunities that this grant may afford us. But now I think it's basically just a question of, does the financial plan, which shows that this could free up some dollars that can be used on other things. Does this make sense? Does the subscription money service the matching funds? And obviously, if the whole program would disappear, we'd also be losing that pot of money. So that money wouldn't be available under any circumstances if the program disappeared. You don't have subscription dollars. So I think this makes good sense in terms of a way to maybe allow us to do this educational function without having to spend other fund dollars that we can use in other ways. So I think it's good. Probably my only reservation is when you do the video, make sure it has a GP rating. I don't want gratuitous salmon sex or violence in it.
We have somewhat gotten the cart before the horse here and have not yet gotten to the BAM recommendation and the LFO recommendation. So if I can do that and remain in work session, I will at this point call BAM forward to tell us what they think of this.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request to apply for the grant.
Thank you. Questions or comments on that? Now we will move to the LFO recommendation.
Madam Chair, Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation was also to approve the request to apply with the understanding that the agency will return to the legislature for expenditure limitation if the grant is awarded, and with the understanding that they will return to request before they request any additional funding from this grant beyond the 2001-03 biennium. And that, in addition to that, with your concerns and the concerns expressed by the committee, we would also attach direction to the agency to, when they come back for limitation, to provide some details on the prototypes and the products that they're going to produce with this money to the appropriate legislative oversight committees.
Now we were supposed to go into work session, but being since we're already there, Senator Dukes.
Well, I was just curious. We have an interesting mix of people in the audience, and I didn't know if any of them wanted to testify on this bill.
The we are not required to take testimony under this proposal. Is my instruction?
Oh, that's right. This isn't. This is just. Never mind. I got it.
Okay. The Representative Krieger.
Just you know, Representative Hansen said something which is unique in that it's an opportunity to spend federal money promoting our viewpoint of how it ought to be, which probably isn't their viewpoint in many instances. So I think it's a good opportunity to make sure we have that, so we're able to do that.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chairman, if it be appropriate, I'd move the subcommittee approve the LFO recommendation and send the request to the full committee.
The Representative Hansen has moved that the subcommittee approve the LFO recommendation and send the request to full committee with a due pass recommendation. You wish to speak to the motion, Representative Krupp.
Well, actually, Madam Chair, I have a question of Captain Ball first before.
By all means.
I wanted to follow up briefly on something that Representative Hayden said in talking about this as perhaps an economic issue. It may be of benefit to some Oregon businesses who may get the printing contract and so forth. There is some question about, I had a constituent who had a contracting had a contract with ODF&W to print their game manual for quite a few years. And recently, you went out of state, and I reviewed that with DAS, and it was they made a number of recommendations that ODF&W make some changes in their RFP process as a result of this particular incident. What assurances do we have that you're going to print this thing in Oregon and that we actually do? I mean, I'd hate to see a project go out of state. I'd rather see the money stay here locally in Oregon.
Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, we will follow DAS's policy on printing. That's all I can say. We're bound to follow that direction. Beyond that, kind of where I'm at.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further comments? I would just like to kind of add here that one of the problems that we have consistently dealt with this agency over the whole time that I've been involved in the process is a lack of communication with the customer base and with the consumers of the agency services. And what we have here is an opportunity to start turning that around. And we have an opportunity here to start communicating to people that are losing trust in the way that the organization works. And I think that we've conveyed very clearly here today to Captain Ball that the agency still has a huge credibility problem even within this building. And I would like the committee to consider this to be a way to move the discussion forward in a positive direction and put some material out there that really does represent the positive things that ODF&W is going to move to in the future. I think that having a legislative check-in on the content of what results from this is a positive thing, because it's so critical at this point for the legislature and the agency to move together down this path of restoring people's faith in this agency. And we need to do it together at the same rate. I don't think that there's any of us that are rural legislators at this table today that haven't dealt continually with constituent issues, people that are just plain frustrated with the way this agency does business. We have a huge opportunity here on the federal government's nickel to do something about this, and I would very much urge you to vote yes on this recommendation. Are there any further comments or questions? Would the staff please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. With the vote, we have a unanimous recommendation to send the request to the full Ways and Means Committee with a do pass recommendation as the LFO recommended it. And are there any announcements or any other things to bring before the committee?
Madam Chair, tomorrow we will start hearing the budget for the Department of Environmental Quality for the next 2 weeks, I believe it's scheduled.
Thank you. And having no more business before the committee, I adjourn the meeting.